Hello, everybody. Welcome to the August 15th BC Edu call. Today, our main topic will be on credential status. Kayode Adeke from MIT Digital Credential Consortium is going to present us on some of the latest work that he's been doing on that over there. And before we get started with that, let's go through a few boilerplate items. First is IP note. Everybody or anyone can participate in these calls. However, any substantive contributions to any of the CCG work items must be done by members of the CCG with full IPR agreements signed. And to do that, you can create an account at W3C. I'll put this in the chat for you, and then also use this link to join the CCG. Okay, second, call notes. So this call is recorded and there are minutes being taken by our, we call it our robot overlord is doing the transcription, which you'll see in the chat. We also do a video recording of this call, which can be, found later. We can send out if you need it. So KOD will have some slides today. So it'll be nice to have that recorded. We use a queue system to ask questions and participate in the conversation. So if you would have a question or would like to say something, please queue yourself first. You can do that by putting a queue plus in the chat, just like I did there. You could also do queue plus and then say a note about something you want to say. And that lets us know if you're responding to something that's being said right away, so we know when to pull you into the conversation. So that is very helpful. And then to remove yourself from the queue, just do Q minus. And then, here we go. Oh, something is in the queue. I guess I did that wrong. I'm gonna remove something from the queue. Okay. Now something has the floor. All right. When we hit Q minus, we're actually looking to see who is in the queue. Okay, next, let's do some introductions and reintroductions. Is there anybody here joining us today for the first time that would like to introduce themselves? Or anybody who's been here for a while and would just like to say hello again and let us know a little bit about something they're working on? If so, go ahead and put yourself in the queue. Okay, I'm going to queue myself up real quick here. One thing I haven't mentioned is that I started a new role at the beginning of August at the Digital Credential Consortium. So I'm going to be their director of technology. That doesn't really change much for BC Edu. I will still be here doing all of that work because the DCC has made, has really been backing all of this work in a really significant way, making sure that we have this open community to work in. So I'm really happy to be able to continue the work there and help to, you do what I want to do, which is help increase adoption and understanding of verifiable credentials. That has been my shift recently. Thanks, Deb. Okay, there's no other introductions or reintroductions. Next, we have announcements and reminders. One is that if you haven't joined it yet, we do have an email list, and our email list can be joined by going here. Put this in the chat for you so we have it in our notes later. It's a great list to join. You don't have to be necessarily technical to join this or to work on technical projects. If you just want to stay in the loop on what's going on in education and training and achievement credentials, that's the list to join. This is where we try to have all of those conversations. And the other announcement that I have is that tomorrow at noon Eastern is the weekly CCG meeting. And I recommend join that as much as you possibly can to learn what's going on in the community as a whole. Hey, does anybody else have any announcements or anything they'd like to share? Okay. Simone, I see that you just joined us. Would you be interested in telling folks about what next week's call will be about? Because it sounds really great.
Yes. Hi. Hello, everyone. Hope you can hear me. So we are going to have as a guest, Irene Hernandez, CEO of Gattaca. Gattaca is an SSI, a company based out of Spain, and they've been involved in building and implementing all the EBSI specifications. So that would be the European Blockchain Service Infrastructure. And particularly they have been looking into, version two of the DID method, DID EBSI, and they have recently shared some reflections around what is the difference between version 1 and 2 and some of the implications that version 2 has with regards to privacy regulations in Europe, also known as GDPR. But they are a community member that has really just been doing a lot of work from Europe, and so that would be, I think, an interesting update from what's happening outside of North America.
Thank you, Simone. It sounds great. I'm really looking forward to it. Oh, okay. Anybody else have anything else before we move on to our main topic? Okay. Why don't I then introduce Coyote? Coyote Azuke is working on this great project related to credential status. He's working on making it possible for issuers to manage the status of their credentials, and for verifiers to check status info, especially revocation and suspension. So he's going to show you some of his work today, and then feel free to ask questions, and we can see what we can learn about it. Welcome, Coyote.
Hello, hello. Thank you. Thank you, Carrie, for the introduction. Here's the link to the presentation that we'll be using for today. I know we generally do not show video for bandwidth purposes, but I'll do that really quickly just to introduce myself and turn it off. But Ms. Kaya Zike again, and a brief introduction is that I've been involved with digital credentials since around 2018, that time that I began my master's program around verifiable credentials and personal data storage management. Since then, I've been contributing to a number of open source projects and developed a couple of products of my own. And these days, I primarily support the Digital Credentials Consortium through MIT, as well as GoBackly, which is a startup that's also doing great work in this space. So thank you for having me, and I'll present my screen so that, and I'll turn off my video so y'all can see what we have.
Okay, Odie, I'll keep an eye on the queue, the chat for you.
Awesome, thank you. Okay, so I just have to give Firefox permission in 1 second. Just bear with me. Okay. I think if I try now. Okay. Are you able to see?
Not yet.
My screen now?
Not yet.
Nope.
If you're transmitting from a Mac, you might need to update the permissions in the control center, which means you'll have to restart in the browser and rejoin.
I was trying to need to do something like that, but was there...
One of us can also screen share the slides.
Yeah, I could do that.
That's Thanks, great. Carrie. Yeah, that'll probably be faster.
Okay.
You can just say next slide.
Yeah, just let me know when. Let me pull it up here. Hold on 1 sec.
Number of animations. Hopefully it's sync.
I'm just clearing everything out of the way here. All right, on the way, everybody. Sorry about the design. delay. Okay, can you see?
Yep, we can see your screen. Mm-hmm.
Great. Did we lose Coyote?
Great, yes.
Oh, there you are. Okay, you can see? Go ahead, you can take it from here now. Just let me know when you want to move to the next slide.
Awesome. Thank you, Carrie. Great. So today we'll be discussing a topic. We're discussing delegated credential statusless hosting. And before I scare anybody away, this is not a new specification for credential status. It's more so concerning ourselves with how can we help issuers to expedite their deployment of credential status infrastructure by leveraging familiar services to them, and hence sort of taking care of the storage and authorization concerns that relate to them. And so just in terms of what we'll be discussing today, I'll be giving a brief background of the topic, and we'll be going through a bit of the state of the art. We'll tell you what our goals were when we designed this a solution, as well as what the actual solution is. We'll then show you a little bit of code before we show you the demo of what we've done. Next slide, please. So credential status management has been around for some time. And one of the earliest conceptions of it really came from certificate authorities with the notion of certificate revocation lists, which is a list of certificates that an issuer has revoked prior to its expiry. And that is sort of the main model that we think about in this space when we think about credential status management. And generally, we think about a resource that is managed by an issuer that informs the public about the state of outstanding credentials. And there's been a lot of work done in this space over the years in terms of standards development and developer tools for how to manage the status of these credentials, as well as how to verify the information on them, such as revocation and suspension. However, storage and authorization have kind of been left out of scope largely, and we figured that it would be great if we can simplify that for issuers in their deployments. Thank you. So next slide. Great. So I want to give a quick definition of credential status. According to the VC spec, credential status is an object value property that enables the discovery of information about the current status of a verifiable credential, such as whether it is suspended or revoked. Next. In other words, it gives consumers of this credential an idea of the issuer's view of the current validity of a credential. Next, please. So here on the right, we have an example of a verifiable credential that has a credential status property on it. One thing to note is that it is an optional value. So not every verifiable credential needs to have this field on it. But if it does have the field on it, it must define two main properties, which is ID and type. And it must also, the remaining properties are specified by the type field. So in this example, we see that we have a statusless 2021 entry for the type, and the three types, the fields below it, status purpose, statusless index, and statusless credential, relate to, are defined in the statusless 2021 entry.
Coyote, quick question. Do we want to wait till the end for questions, or do we want to encourage people to, if they encounter something or want to ask questions about each slide, to raise their hand?
Okay, I'm happy to take questions as they come up.
Yeah. Thanks.
Next. These are just the two fields. So the state of the art. So there have been a lot of great work done in the credential status space, and one of the early conceptions of this or examples of this came in 2018 from Hyperledger ND via the HIPE0011 credential verification spec. And they use a bunch of cool technology, cryptographic accumulators, to determine which credentials have been revoked. And interestingly enough, I learned in the spec that it seems that this spec predates the notion of verification support, even in the VC spec, which I found to be interesting. And a couple years later, the CCG would develop a spec of their own via the Verification List 2020 spec, and soon after via a refined version in the Status List 2021 spec, which sort of granted a more general notion of status that goes beyond just revocation, but also supports suspension and other forms of credential status. Next, please. And the most, for all of these specifications, this point on hosting. So for all of these specifications, it's important for verifiers to be able to check the status of the credential somehow, right? And the most obvious way to do this is to host the resources in a public location, namely a distributed ledger or issuer-controlled website. Any questions here? You can move on to the next slide, please.
Yeah, sure.
Awesome. Great. So I want to talk to you all about Status List 2021. This is the spec that we use in our design, and it's one of the more advanced specs out there, in my opinion. And in this example to the left, what you see is a credential from a couple slides ago. So nothing new here yet. We have a verifiable credential, it has the credential status on it, and it has all the fields that we discussed earlier. Now, if you pay attention to, if you key in on the status purpose, status list index, and status list credential properties, these are the properties that are introduced by the Status List 2021 spec. The first of these properties is the most self-explanatory. This is saying that the issuer is tracking this type of status for this credential. So for a verifier, when they want to verify the status of the credential, this is the information that they will learn. Now, the other two properties are more specific to the meat and potatoes of how this specification works. And it relates to a new resource that they introduced. So if you can just go forward just a couple steps, Carrie, until you see a new object on the right. Awesome, thank you. So this on the right is a Status List 2021 credential. And the best way to think about this credential is it is a credential that manages the status of a batch of multiple credentials. It's a mouthful, I'll say that one more time, but this is a credential that the issuer manages that tracks a batch of several different credentials. And so what this means, if you could just click one more time, Carrie. So the issuer, the most important piece of information on this credential is this encoded list value right here. And what it is in the simplest representation, you can think of it as a sequence of characters, let's say X's and O's, that represents the status of a credential at that position, right? And so if the value of that was X, it would mean that it is invalid with respect to the status purpose. So in other words, it is revoked. If the value is O, it means that it is valid with respect to the purpose. In other words, it is not revoked. And if you focus again on the left side, you'll see that the status list credential property, that is just a way for verifiers to retrieve this credential on the right. So it's a public link that they can access. And the status list index tells them which position in that encoded list is represents this credential.
So I want to pause here before we move on to the next slide. I want to make sure everybody absorbs this. So I want to make sure everybody understands what that encoded list is for, right? Because at its simplest, a credential status is binary for a given status purpose. So like for revocation, credential is either revoked or it's not. So the very first sort of naive implementations of revocation status were to host some kind of object, either a verifiable credential or something else, that said revoked or not for each individual credential, right? Easy. So, or even before that, I think what Open Badges did is just publish a plain list of all revoked credential IDs on their website. Yeah, so you get the credential, you can go look up that list to see if it's revoked. So very easy. And we wouldn't be having this problem, this conversation here, except there's a couple of major problems there. One is privacy, that if you publish a list of revoked credentials, well, you can go see everybody whose credentials are revoked. But an even more important one is what's known as the phone home problem. It's one of the downsides of hosting an individual status revocation for each credential is that whoever's hosting it, whoever's running that website, can track requests, can track how many times and from where, from what IP addresses and what timestamp, some verifier is checking for revocation. And that is generally regarded in the community as too much information. That's not necessary. That is a threat. So then the reason the status list spec, arose is that, okay, so if we don't want the host, whoever's controlling the web server, to know each time each individual credential is looked up, why don't we batch it? Why don't we rely on herd immunity, on herd privacy, and batch a whole bunch of credentials at random, and then the verifier can request this whole batch, this entire credential that has the encoded list that contains the status of 20 or 100, I forget how many it is, credential statuses. And that way, the request will be spread out over that entire cohort of credentials, and that way we get herd privacy. I see David is on the queue.
Yes, if I've understood this correctly, my question is about the currency of the information. If I've understood it correctly, on the left is my verifiable credential. It's been issued to me, it's in my wallet, and I've got this credential status, and simultaneously to issuing this, then there's been this credential published on the right-hand side by the issuer that will hopefully, in that encoded list, have a zero against 9, 4, 5, 6, 7. Okay? That's what I've understood in the presentation so far. So my question is now, what happens when tomorrow my credential is revoked?
When your credential is revoked, right? So when your credential is revoked, this credential on the right will be updated. The encoded list will be updated such that the bit at that position 9, 4, 5, 6, 7 is now a 1 or an X. We discussed it earlier.
But the credential on the right does not have an expiry time. It's only got an issue at that time. So I don't know whether the one I've got is the latest one or not. So how do I know how often I should keep going to the issuer to fetch this credential? And so that's the question there.
Yes. That comes up, I think, a question time. So that really, I think, boils down to, we leave that to the implementers of the system, because that really comes down to how often, what is your caching sort of system like? Do you check every day? Do you check every hour? And you'd have to give an SLA to the individual using your system to let them know that this is just going to be valid for a given day or for a given hour, or et cetera. But I don't think that's something that the spec tries to address or to solve.
Dimitri?
Thank you.
If I may add to that. So the cache control is left to the individual protocol, meaning because this particular credential is held over HTTP, whoever's publishing the status list can rely on HTTP cache control directives, meaning each time the verifier sends an HTTP GET for this status list credential, one of the headers in the response says, only cache this for an hour, meaning we're going to renew this thing every hour. And that way the verifier knows how long to cache it, right? So we get that the caching mechanism for free with HTTP, so we don't need to put in an explicit expiration in the credential. Now, if the URL of the status list credential was not HTTP, was some other, was IPFS or some other method that doesn't come with cache control metadata, then you're right, David, we should include an expires field in the status list credential.
Great.
No more questions for now, Ted, if you want to go ahead.
Also, thank you for the questions, David, and great. Thanks for getting ahead of me. Michelle's going to get into the herd privacy notion, which is, I think, one of the main benefits of the specification, which is just to reiterate, when a verifier is interested in learning about the status of a credential, they are only communicating to the issuer that they're interested in a subset of credentials that they manage, not in a specific one. So it keeps the issuer away from fine-grained details about how a specific credential is being used. If you just go forward just one step, Kerry. Please. Thank you. This is just a digital representation, just for the visual learners out there. The green slots represent the valid credentials with respect to the purpose, so unrevoked, and the red slots represent the invalid, i.e. revoked credentials. Next slide, please. Great. So we have a number of goals that we were considering when we designed our credential status infrastructure. The main governing goal is that we wanted to simplify the deployment for issuers of their credential status infrastructure. And we do this by leveraging third-party services for the storage and authorization of credential status resources. And the great thing about this is that we're kind of meeting credential issuers where they are, right? So we're allowing them to use a familiar hosting service and also providing a potential path to switch between services. So if we can step ahead just one slide, we'll get into the solution. So we again decided to use the Status List 2021 specification, and feel free to consult the design doc at that link. And for the hosting solution, I think this is really where we innovate, and we decided to use source control services such as GitHub, GitLab, and Codeberg. And we also support issuer-hosted websites traditionally. And so what this allows us to do, again, is it recognizes the fact that organizations already use these services to host their code. And also these services often provide developers with OAuth tokens that they can use to access APIs of the services to update resources. And so why don't we just use these services to help issuers manage their credential status lists and metadata associated with it? Any questions here? Great, so
Dimitri has something to add to this.
Yeah, if I could just add a couple more words. So I want you everybody to picture the very specific conversation, the very specific problem this solves. Somebody says, okay, we're issuing credential. Great. Can we add revocation? Sure, why not? What's a good spec? Well, we've got this status list 2021 spec. Okay. Then engineering, how hard of a lift is this to add this to our system? How many hours before you can add revocation to our issuer? And that's where the real problem starts, because hosting a file on a website, that bit is easy. The really difficult part, which is what makes Coyote's work so exciting here. The really difficult part is adding the user interface and specifically adding permissions to who is allowed to edit, who's allowed to revoke the credential, right? So the spec gives us the data model, gives us the protocol, the mechanisms, very easy. What's really not easy and what shoots up the implementation time into many weeks, not to mention like really hard requirement gathering, is setting up the delegation, the chain of command of, how do we model the trust and permission hierarchy of a particular university down to the registrar? And then how does the registrar delegate individual officers to be able to hit the button to flip that bit for the file to be updated? So the main innovation here is the realization that because permission control and login systems and graphical user interface is the hardest part about this, can we outsource it to somewhere else? And the realization was made, oh, Git hosting organizations like GitHub and GitLab and Codeberg already provide all of that. They provide the permission systems, the login systems. Institutions are familiar with setting up GitHub organizations. All of that stuff is worked out for us. Why don't we reuse it? Go ahead, Gary.
Right.
One question I'm asking, these are all, I believe, hosted services. Could someone just use Git for this on its own without using GitHub, GitLab, or Codeberg?
So the question with Git is always which protocol will Git use, right? Because Git has SSH, it has HTTP, and it has a number of other protocols where it's hosted. So some server on the cloud has to be running a Git server.
Mm-hmm.
So can you use Git alone? Sort of. It requires a Git server and a Git client.
Okay, thanks. Xander?
Hey, guys. I actually hadn't spoken before, so I'll just introduce myself quickly. I'm the security lead for the Pocket team. I just wanted to follow up on David's question real quick. So the idea there was that you were going to rely on HTTP cache control headers to set the expiry time for a given certificate, right? But you're also talking about using services like GitHub to do the hosting. I don't believe that you can set the expire header value if you're using a service like that. So that maybe you may need to put the you may need to put the time value on the file then.
Right.
Anyway,
yeah, that's a good that's one restriction that we, you know, when we start to use these third-party services, I think there's different levels of access that they all each provide. And I'm sure maybe like if you have a paid account, that makes a difference as to how much you could control. But I think largely you make a good point, Daniel.
I don't think so. Like I've used the enterprise versions before. I think basically if you're using GitHub to host files like GitHub pages or whatever, they really handle everything, and you don't get access to that level
mm-hmm.
of protocol. Anyway, what may be worth looking into.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sorry, I'm in the queue, so I'll jump in real quick. that's an excellent point. And I know you haven't actually, I'm going to let you get into, like, how are you doing this. So maybe I'm jumping the gun here, Katie, and I'm sorry if I am. But are you considering using GIS as part of this? Because GIS get versioned. This is something to consider. Okay.
Oh.
That's the comment there, but yeah.
Oh, this is for like the, like, for example, the location list, for example.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So something like this came up, actually, maybe Trin here made a great recommendation at some point about something like that where you would, cause GitHub, for example, has a way for you to use a link that, as opposed to using GitHub pages, you can also use a link to the file directly that doesn't rely on GitHub pages. But I would imagine that the control might be, or rather like it might be, you might be restricted the same way in that case as well in terms of controlling what the cache mechanism is like. So yeah, that would be something to explore. But the good thing, I'll show you a little bit later how some of these things can be customized for different status clients of different services. And there's a way to add flexibility for that. So we'll get into that a little bit. So if there are no other questions, we can move on to the next slide.
Sure.
Great. So this is a sort of a visual representation of the architecture. So we have an issuer admin who presumably would already have the permissions that they need inside of, example, a GitHub organization. So they already have access to create, read, and write data to repos in the organization. And if you click ahead, so this actor would be able to hit the credential status endpoint of a VCAPI instance, which allows them to update the status, e.g. revoke a credential. More step. And then ultimately that enables them to create, read, and update data in these different services. And so before we move on to a demo, I wanted to just show a little bit of code. And so this is the main sort of class that we implement to with this code. And so this tells subclasses different methods that they need to implement for them to be valid credential status clients. And so, for example, you need to provide a base URL that can be used to reference the credential status information. You need to enable the client to create the status repo from the code. You need to enable them to read and write status list and log data and config data. So as long as the subclasses can implement these abstract methods, then they're a valid client. And so if you can step forward just one step, please, Carrie. We'll see that in this example, GitHub, a credential status client, for their get credential status URL, you notice that there is a github.io there, meaning that it's using GitHub pages. But this is also the place where we could use a gist instead or a URL that points directly to the file. And there's also, we also are using the OctoKit library, a popular GitHub SDK, to update and read information from the repo, which obviously will look different for different services. Any questions about any of this?
Nope, I think we're good. Why don't you go ahead?
Awesome. So we're just going to get into a demo now. Just step forward one and need access. Maybe that's going to come to my email or something. I'll probably get an email about that. One second.
Gary, I think you have to hit request again on the subsequent page. Yeah, like that.
Okay, awesome.
There, yeah.
Okay, just go ahead.
Let me know when it's all set, Cody.
I just shared it, yeah. Is the volume on?
Were you able to hear the volume when I did that?
No.
Dimitri, do you know how to make that work?
In the settings, so if you go to the three dot menu at the bottom, yep. Settings, there's
share audio.
Yeah, share audio. There's a share audio checkbox.
Thanks for your patience, everybody, while I'm getting there. All right, let me try that again. If it doesn't work, Katie, you could just walk us through it.
Okay, no problem.
No, that doesn't seem to be coming through. So we can encourage people to watch, since we pasted the link to the slide deck, everybody can watch the video and the demo on their own.
Mm-hmm.
But you can, Coyote, you can describe what's demoing.
Sure.
Yeah, Coyote, you want me to start over and you can just sort of walk us through what's happening?
Sure. I mean, it's a pre-recorded demo, but effectively what we were demonstrating is requesting a credential from our version of VC API, importing that into DCC's learner wallet. And then from there, we kind of show you throughout the whole process how the repo is updating. And so the GitHub repo is what we use in the demo. And then when we revoke the credential, again, from the VC API, we show you the results of that in the repo. And we also show you that in the wallet, it now shows that the credential is revoked. So again, you should be able to view that video in the presentation, but that's effectively what's going on. So that was the last clip, actually. So if there's any questions or feedback, I'm happy to take any. David, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Am I correct in that the revocation list violates the verifiable credential standard? Because every verifiable credential that's issued is supposed to have a unique ID. But your revocation list is repeatedly issuing the same or different verifiable credentials, but using the same ID.
So the credential continues to have the same, the credential never changes per se. It's the information at least the credential that the holder controls. It's the credential that the status of the credential that manages, you know, that has an encoded list value that manages multiple credentials. It's that one that will be shuffled and changed as the credentials are revoked and suspended.
Correct. But it's still keeping the same ID, which to conform to the W3C VC data model, it should have every time it's reissued, the revocation list should have a new ID.
Can I jump in here as well?
Go ahead.
So David, what you're proposing or what you're saying is, essentially, if we required verifiable credentials to be content addressable, so that every time the content of a verifiable credential changes, the ID has to change. But the VC spec does not actually have that requirement. You are, and this is very frequently done, allowed to publish credentials with the same ID while their contents changes. For example, if you reissue it and there's an updated timestamp. Or a different signature. So that is not a requirement in the spec.
To add to that question, sort of, can we maybe briefly talk about the difference between credential status list and also credential refresh? Coyote or Dimitri, would you mind explaining that, or both of you?
Sure. Coyote, do you want to go ahead?
A credential status list versus credential refresh, you said? So my understanding of it generally is that, so credential status is what we discussed here, which is that the issuer manages a publicly accessible resource that allows verifiers to check the status of the repo, or rather of the credential. For the refresh service, my understanding is that if that is not provided, the issuer exposes an endpoint that allows for verifiers to to refresh the credentials whenever it has, or rather just to be able to refresh it whenever, at whatever cadence, you know, seems reasonable. That's generally how I understand it, but I'm happy to allow for any other discussion on that as well.
Yeah, so the refresh spec is complementary to the expiration mechanism. So if my driver's license is good for 4 years, what happens when it expires after 4 years? The refresh spec basically describes the credential version of, oh, I have to take the old one into the Bureau of Motor Vehicles, and they issue me a new one. So they're both the status and the refresh exist alongside each other. And in fact, some of our example specs have both. Or if you look at examples in Open Badges version 3 spec, a lot of the verifiable credentials there have both a status list section and a refresh section.
Thanks. Does anybody else have any questions about this? Or any other points they'd like to make about the status and how this works? I have a question for all of you. Is there anybody here who has implemented credential status and would like to tell us, you know, about how they're using it and how they've implemented it? Okay. Katie, we really appreciated this. Oh, I see somebody in the queue. Jonathan, you have the floor.
Jonathan, you might be muted.
Yeah. We can't hear you, Jonathan, if you're speaking.
If you have like an additional hardware mute on your mic, maybe.
Okay, is that better?
Yep. Better.
We got you. Thank you.
I was using one AirPod and it's the one that's dead, so.
Ah, always happens.
Sorry about that. Real quick, by way of introduction, I don't think I've spoken much. My name is Jonathan Bethune. I'm the engineering manager for Pocket, colleague of Xander, who spoke a little while ago. Just real quick, I was wondering if there was a way to get a link to the presentation. We actually had a lot of discussion internally about the tech, so we just wanted to look into it a little more.
Sure, yeah. Definitely can share that.
Oh, there we go.
Got it.
Oh, great. It's fast. Okay. Whoa, I actually didn't get to click on it. Let me just grab it. It's in the chat, right? There we go.
Yeah, scroll up a little bit. The chat moves pretty fast because of the transcription.
Yeah. There go. Got it. All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, cool.
Okay.
Awesome.
Okay, well, no one has anything else. Katie, do you have anything else you would like to add?
Nope, that was everything. I just thank you all for your time, and we're continuing to refine this work. You know, we primarily are supporting GitHub and GitLab at the moment, and working on some of the other services as well. So, just happy to have this opportunity, and thank you all again for the fruitful discussion.
Yeah, thank you very much.
And if I can add, so if anybody has questions about this work, please. Send an email to the VCEDU mailing list, or feel free to contact Coyote or myself directly. The code is free. It references an open spec. We encourage everybody to join in the conversation.
Yep, and I actually see Mahesh, you have queued yourself up.
Yes. I had a question. Slightly unrelated here, but more on the Open Badges 3.0 spec. I've been trying to get hold of it, and I seem to be paywalled by this IMS Global. If somebody has that and can make the Open Badges 3.0 spec, which is publicly visible, I would appreciate it. Thank you.
I can grab that link for you. me 1 second here. Tal Ted, you're in the queue. You have the floor.
Just following up on responding to David's question about the unique identifier for each credential. In the same way that a URI is expected to be stable, that is the stability that we mean for the ID in these verifiable credentials. A URI is always meant to name the same thing, which doesn't mean that the thing it names stays the same forever. Much like your name always means you, but you don't stay the same forever. That's it.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Hey, the queue is empty unless no one has anything else. We have a few minutes left, so we could end the call here. We have another minute to see if anybody has anything. Otherwise, I hope you all have a great week. And we'll see you next week.
Cheers. Thank you.
Thanks, Coyote. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, Coyote.